Esclarmont Defoix, Hélène Bernard, SRC. In her book entitled Great Women Initiates, Hélène Bernard, SRC, shares this short story of the life of one of the most prominent Cathars of the Languedoc in the south of France, a good woman, or bona femina in every sense of the word.
In the year 1155, in the heart of the Occitan country, in a majestic castle overlooking the river Ariège, a second child was born to Lady Zabelia Tranqueval de Carcassonne and Roger Bernard, Count of Foix. She was a little girl, and the wonderful and predestined name of Esclarmonde was given to her. It was from this haunt, like an eagle's nest perched on a mountaintop, that her father, a powerful man, managed his estates. The House of Foix was of Iberian origin, all the way back to Aquitaine, who had fought against Caesar. Heir to the manor of Foix, through the Counts of Comminges of Merovingian stock, it became under the name of the Counts of Carcassonne and Couserans, titular to the county of Foix, around 1068. The feudal rule of the Counts of Foix crept into the Ariège Valley and consisted of many manors, the majority of which were established under the reign of Charlemagne. Through Andorra and Urgell, the county was directly connected with the Iberian Peninsula. In the central Pyrenees, its sentinels on the steppes of Spain were called Montcalm, Ville de Sac, Ségur, Aston, and L'Hospitalet, while Aulis and Luchon led to Gascony. Confident in the motto, Custos Sumerum, guardians of the high plateaus, and under the protection of powerful armories, the walls and the monumental and solitary dwelling sheltered the happy childhood of Esclarmonde. In 1162, when Esclarmonde was 7 years old, her father's eldest daughter, who was born from his first marriage to Cecile of Barcelona, was married. On the occasion of these magnificent wedding nuptials, the little girl saw for the first time the best of Occitan chivalry. Esclarmonde's radiant beauty blossomed forth in this cultured and sparkling southern court. Between her older brother, Ramon Rogier, nicknamed the Druze, the initiate, the pure, the troubadour, and her little sister, Zabelia. In both summer and winter, the days were spent hunting and feasting. Travelers came and went, always enjoying the open and warm hospitality of Roger Bernard and his family. Immediately after sunset, with a fire crackling in the fireplace, guests were well fed. Then, affected by the soft glow of candlelight, one listened with an open mind and soul to the sacred texts and hidden words that the troubadour sang and declaimed from castle to castle in a secret language called the Gay Savoie, happy knowledge. Troubadours. This name alone rouses us. Trouvar, trouve, found. They had found a truth, and garbed in the hermetic colors green, yellow, and red, they spread their knowledge. Secret ambassadors and the bearers of news among the influential people of the time, these initiates, called fidèles d'amour, became the disciples and secret propagators of Catharism in Occitania. Courts of love flourished in Foix, Aragon, Sedan, Gascony, and Languedoc. Divine science and asceticism were highly valued, and borrowing from ancient Druid teachings, they honored the law of numbers. This ancient oral tradition had its ultimate origins in the mystery initiations of old Egyptian religion, which over time spread into communities through the Mediterranean basin. With a long lineage extending through the Egyptians, Greeks, and Essenes, the Arabs became the keepers of this science of the Magi. And it was to seek this knowledge, rather than to conquer Jerusalem, that some of the first crusaders started on their way, bringing back sacred knowledge from which Pyrenean Catharism was born. But the proud knights also brought back a taste for luxury, to which the Church of Peter and its servants had succumbed. For some bishops and abbots lived ostentatious lives, filled with the comforts of the best that money could buy. Esclarmonde watched and learned of the weaknesses of the clergy and the unvirtuous lives of many clerics. Her adolescence was marked by the appearance of a Bulgarian, Bogomil, bishop called Nicetas. His mission gave structure and formality to Catharism as he organized its clergy and the statutes of its dissident Catholics. The House of Foix welcomed him, and young Esclarmonde and her brother, Raymond Roger, were highly impressed by his personality. Esclarmonde was too young to play a role in the management of religion, which called for nothing less than perfection. Nevertheless, she had much influence at the court of Foix. She was intelligent and refined, and had famous troubadours as teachers. Witty and talented, at 20 years of age, her reputation as a woman of superior intelligence and knowledge attracted many admirers and suitors to her. But like many of her peers, she sacrificed herself to a union ruled by politics. So in 1175, she married Jourdain III de Lisle Jourdain, who was related to the Counts of Toulouse. The name Jourdain, was a reminder of his crusading ancestors, who had probably taken their name from the River Jordan in Palestine. Jourdain's education was based on a particularly fervent form of Catholicism, but Esclarmonde was a Cathar, and maybe she had hoped to eventually convert her husband. If their marriage was not a complete spiritual union, it was nevertheless a very fruitful one. Six children were born in the family home where Jourdain ruled by the letter and Esclarmonde by the intellect. First, there were two daughters, Escaron and Obisca, then three boys, Bernard, Jourdain, and Otan, and finally a little girl, Philippa. For 25 years, Esclarmonde led a dignified life with Jourdain. She had given up trying to convince her husband of the cogency of Cathar doctrine, but watched very closely the development of the situation in Occitania. She conducted courts of love and remained in touch with the greatest heretical personalities of the time. The Catholic Church tried in vain to reclaim the noble lost sheep. At Albi, in 1176, a council reminded them of their capital sins, and a little later the Archbishop of Lyon condemned them and accused the future Raymond VI of Toulouse of protecting them. Finally, on March 20th, 1179, Pope Alexander III excommunicated them all. In 1180, her little sister Zibelia married Roger I, Comminges. Their paths were different, but the two sisters respected each other and helped one another on several occasions. In 1181, Cardinal Henri of Albano openly declared war on the Cathar sinners, and Jourdain was dragged into this repressive crusade. As an insane torrent of hatred and violence raged throughout the region, and with a firmness of conviction, Esclarmonde first protected, then led the condemned people to the county of Foix. The Cardinal of Albano was furious and continued his cruelty. Monks loyal to him spread the rumor that Esclarmonde was responsible for this ravage by fire and the sword. They had not forgiven her for her firm stand and sought to influence her husband against her. During these difficult times, Esclarmonde displayed an unusual strength and exhibited extraordinary feelings of social solidarity, a very rare thing in the 12th century. In 1185, Pope Lucius III allowed the wounded country to heal its wounds, and Esclarmonde resumed her life as a lady of the manor, attending to her children. In the months that followed, she had the great joy of seeing her brother, Raymond Roger, whom she loved dearly, marry the delightful Philippa de Montcalm. Philippa loved and admired Esclarmonde, and followed in her footsteps on the perilous path of Catharism. For many years, in spite of the turmoil, the Count of Foix, Roger Bernard, maintained peace on his estates, In 1188, however, he passed on, and on the threshold of the 13th century, a new pope, Innocent III, was elected to office. The first years of the new century were very trying for Esclarmonde. In 1203, her brother Ramon Roger was taken prisoner, and in 1204, after 29 years of marriage, her husband Jourdan de Lisle Jourdan passed on. Having never ceased to love his wife, in spite of her subversive ideas, the clauses of Jourdan's will were in favor of Esclarmonde. His whole family was by now loyal to Catharism. Children, sons-in-law, and daughters-in-law felt a deep affection and great admiration for Esclarmonde. Having no regard for the material things of life, Esclarmonde left to her children the wealth and huge estates of their father, then returned to her native mountains and remained in Foix to rule there in her brother Ramon Roger's absence. Free to assert herself and her faith, she surrounded herself with officers and friends of Ramon Roger and proclaimed herself dedicated to the Paraclete, in biblical terms, the Holy Spirit sent by Jesus following the crucifixion. The knights and the people from the surrounding area responded to her appeal for unity for a single faith. She selected trustworthy tutors for her nephews and devoted herself body and soul to her vocation. Known as the Dove of the Paraclete, Esclarmonde established social institutions, workshops, centers of apprenticeship in various branches, and especially hospitals for the elderly and those wounded in the war, as well as lodgings for the ever-increasing number of refugees. Under her leadership, convents for perfect ones and schools where poor children were taught the new spirit were founded. Led by her, the perfect ones went to every home. They assisted outcasts and took care of the sick. Unconstrained, the people were won over by their caring, charitable ways and their pure form of mysticism. In 1206, after 3 years in captivity, Ramon Roger rejoined his court. At last, Esclarmonde could devote herself to the life she'd been yearning for. She retired to Castellet de Pommiers. A high Cathar officer had nothing more to teach her, and Guillebert de Castres, her teacher and faithful friend, deemed her worthy to be raised to the rank of a perfect one and archdeaconess. Accompanied by Henri de Fanjo, Fay, the Countess of Dufour, and Ramon de Miro, Esclarmonde received the Consolamentum in Fanjo. This purifying ceremony strengthened the new archdeaconess in her faith, and she devoted all her time and vitality to the establishment of Cathar communities. Along with her activities, Esclarmonde undertook with Ramon Perella, her knight servant, and other dignitaries such as Guillebert de Castres, the reconstruction of the fortress of Montségur. Relations with the church were becoming bitter. Innocent III issued a sharp anathema against the innovators, but Esclarmonde could not idly stand by while the South was so badly treated. Papal malediction only strengthened her convictions. In April 1206, for nearly 1 month, the 7th Contradictory Cross-Examining Council was held in Pommiers. The church had the fiery new Bishop of Toulouse as its main representative. Esclarmonde, surrounded by Philippa and her beautiful daughters, Ermesine and Indy de Fanjo, participated passionately in these debates. She demanded complete equality between men and women, an established fact in the rebellious religion. Already prejudiced against women in general through his religious training, the prelate of Toulouse, annoyed by the intellectual abilities of his rival, challenged her. "Madam, go and spin your wheel. It does not become you to argue in such debates." On November 17, 1207, the Pope ordered the King of France to arm his soldiers and march against the infidels, as the Cathars were called. Indulgences and promises of salvation were granted to them. Esclarmonde prepared Montségur as the major center of resistance and moved the treasure of the Paraclete up to the high rock. Surrounded by the deacons and the perfect ones, she often looked down toward the forests of Belena, a reminder of the Celtic deity of light and of Kie, the priest of the mistletoe. Soon, files of refugees arrived, fleeing from the brutality of Simon de Montfort. For years, terrible repressions were carried out by his forces. The Bishop of Fouquet founded a brotherhood whose members were recruited among the most fanatical and violent enemies of the Cathars. Simon de Montfort murdered heretics by the thousands in a bloody frenzy, sparing none. The occupants of Béziers took refuge in a church upon the arrival of the tyrant and his mercenary abbots. It was then that the abbot of Citeaux cried out, "Kill them all, God will know his own." And there, in that place of worship, these unfortunate people were burned alive, like so many others. Finally, the King of France became disenchanted with the bloody, dishonorable way in which Simon de Montfort and his acolytes had led the crusade. Innocent III remained caught between his personal temperance and the growing ambitions of his subjects. The principle of the holy war could not hide reality, a policy of conquest. For years, pillages, murders, and pogroms continued, but in 1227, Occitania experienced a period of respite. Having weathered the bloody times, Esclermont, almost in her 80s by now, believed the time was right to restore good order within the Cathar religion. She helped and cared for the faithful adepts and reorganized the clergy. Communities, hospices, and workshops were established throughout the area. The archdeaconess conferred the consolamentum and baptism and supervised numerous convents. Catharism rose again from its ashes. However, as late as 1229, the Cathars continued to be persecuted, and many lived deep in the woods or as discreetly as possible. Some found sanctuary with sympathizing noble people, and a great solidarity was established despite the ceaseless repression. In August 1232, Guillebert de Castro and Esclermont returned to Montségur. The dove of the Paraclet was spared the pain of seeing the fall of her beloved castle, the site of the final defeat, the martyrdom of her friends, and the final subjugation of her free Occitania. For in 1240 at Montségur, the Cathar princess passed on and journeyed to the stars. Guillebert de Castro had the mystical joy of secretly burying the great Esclermont, his faithful companion, through times of joy and times of trial. From good times to bad times, they have served the good. Great Esclermont, a dove has flown away, but in the Cathar country, your name remains forever engraved, Light of the World.